Have you ever felt your heartbeat race before speaking in a meeting or struggled to find words in English even though you knew them? That anxious flutter in your chest, it's real and it's holding you back.
And you're not alone because language anxiety affects more than 60% of advanced learners. But what if just breathing and a moment's mindfulness could calm your mind, boost your focus, and let your English flow?
Welcome to the Fluent Edge podcast, the show for international professionals who want to level up their English and career with confidence and clarity. I'm Sean Watson, English communication coach and accent clarity specialist.
And I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, and leadership strategist.
Today, we're exploring how integrating mindfulness and breath work into your daily routine can help you become a more confident, fluent English speaker, especially under pressure.
And I don't blame you if you are skeptical, if mindfulness sounds abstract or unfamiliar or just weird. It really is all about simply paying attention to your experience, what's happening for you right now without judging it. And you don't have to be spiritual or meditate in a cave because it's practical, accessible, and proven to work by lots and lots of science, and even for professionals who've never tried it before.
And it's not about emptying your mind, but it's noticing your thoughts without reacting to them. So this is key for language learners, because when you're thinking, what if I mess up? You're no longer present. You're no longer in the moment. And that's how you build mindful awareness, a critical skill in today's attention economy. Breathwork helps bring you into that mindful state. I've used breathwork not only for coaching, but also in my previous career as a classical singer. And I can tell you that when we breathe deeply, deliberately, and slowly, we engage what we call the parasympathetic nervous system. So that's the part that calms us down. In a 2024 research study, it showed that breathing slowly can really affect your brain patterns, lower stress chemicals in the body, and even help people feel more balanced emotionally.
Breathing is the best tool for mindfulness because it's free. It's always available to us. We do it all the time anyway, and it is the link between our body's unconscious processes and our conscious processes. If you think about it, it's the one thing we can do totally on autopilot. Autopilot might be a good vocabulary word for folks. But when you're asleep, your body breathes by itself, right? You don't have to put any attention onto it. It happens the same way that your heart pumps, the same way your cells exchange nutrients and waste products. Breathing is a completely automatic process. And it's the one process that almost all of us can control with intention. I can't directly make my heartbeat faster or slower. Some people can if you practice for a really long time, but I could hold my breath right now. I could slow it down. I could move it up into my chest, and I can move it down into my belly. And I can change the rate, the cadence. I can do multiple in-breaths and long, slow out-breaths. I can breathe out through my mouth, through my nose, through one nostril, the other nostril. You ever see the Swiss Army knives that are so big, they almost look like a joke? There's like,
yes.
Like that's what your breath is.
Like a soup ladle on the side of it and a power saw.
You know, I don't know how useful that would be, but your breath is that. And because it can change your physiology instantaneously in so many different ways.
Even for pronunciation, breathing is super important. Your diaphragm and abdominal muscles support your voice. And so controlled breathing often means clearer speech, better pacing. And what do I mean by that? Some people think that simply means to slow down when you're reading something or presenting. But I think that strategic pacing is much more than that. It gives you a chance to ground yourself again, to breathe again.
Yeah. And just as a listener, you can tell some people have interesting things to say, but it's fatiguing to listen to them because they lack. And here's a word that I'm guessing that most of our listeners don't know because most native English speakers don't know it. Prosody, P-R-O-S-O-D-Y, which is basically how your voice sounds like music. And in music, you need contrast. You need fast sections that are very exciting, and you need slow sections that are contemplative. You need loud crescendos and soft legatos, right? And so if somebody speaks with music in their voice, it's much easier to listen to, and they're signaling safety. So one of the ideas of mindfulness is that when we are doing this breathing, when we are in our bodies, paying attention to our experience, our bodies interpret that as being safe. And when our bodies are safe, our minds then start looking for fruit. I mean, in a literal sense, we have evolved to look for food and mates and shelter, and we have to avoid getting eaten by predators. So when you are in fear, when you can't think of the words or you feel like you're being judged, your body thinks that you're being threatened by a predator. It loses the ability to be creative. It's just focusing on keeping you alive. Whereas when you do this breathing and you start signaling safety to yourself and to other people, then your mind, the blood literally shifts from the amygdala, from the HPA axis, from the stress parts of your brain and your nervous system, to your prefrontal cortex. That's all about creativity, strategy, and looking for opportunities. It's about discovery. So if you find yourself, I can't think of the word, right? And I have this all the time in Spanish. I'll finish a conversation and then go home and I'll say, oh, I knew that word. But in the moment when I get agitated, my mind is not in discovery. It is searching for where is the predator.
I love that. My mind is not in discovery. I can certainly relate to that with my classical music background, because sometimes I would do a show and just be unreasonably nervous, and you can feel the breathing getting higher in the body and the tension growing. It happened to people like Pavarotti, one of the greatest tenors of the 20th century. And so what do you do when you make a mistake on the stage? Do it with great authority, as my coach used to say, because as soon as you start thinking, oh my God, I forgot that line, then the panic sets in, the sweating happens, and you know that old expression, don't let the audience see you sweat, which actually is pretty hard to avoid when you're in a 3 or 4 hour opera production on a hot stage, but the principle is still there. And I think this applies even to presenting or public speaking. Maybe you'll screw up here or there, but do it with great authority.
The best example of that I've ever seen, and I think people can find this on YouTube, Ella Fitzgerald, the great American jazz singer, was performing, I believe, in Berlin around 1960, 61. And the new song had come out that everyone was asking her to sing, Mack the Knife. It wasn't a new song, but Bobby Darin had just popularized it. So everyone wanted her to do Mack the Knife. So she learned Mack the Knife. And in the middle of this performance, she forgot the words. And she immediately starts making up her own lyrics, scatting in between, smiling like anything. It was one of the greatest performances of all time, because she understood that when you make a mistake, it's not the same as a predator. It's not the end of the world. It's your response to that mistake that will determine whether people are with you, whether they turn against you, whether they turn away in pity, or whether they embrace our shared humanity. The mindfulness is all about, here I am in this moment, having forgotten the words, without judgment of myself. This is what is. Now, what can we create together?
That's great. I do have a colleague who still works in the professional opera world. And a few years ago, he was doing some concert singing, and it was very challenging work by Gustav Mahler. And I guess they were maybe 10 bars in, and he just wasn't focused. And he just said, stop, let's do it again. It was a live performance where people had paid hundreds of dollars to see this, but they were okay because he was smiling. He looked relaxed, and the audience just kind of chuckled and said, okay, let's just do this again.
We think of ourselves as having experiences rather than I'm on stage performing for you. I think it can change how we think about the stakes. What could happen if we don't succeed? What are the risks, the actual risks? And what are the potential gains? So if I went to that concert, that's the moment that I would tell people about with delight. It was a live event as opposed to seeing a movie.
There was a recent psychology study that showed that just 5 days of short mindfulness practice significantly improved attention, academic performance, and reduced test anxiety. So imagine what it could do for language learners or people presenting in a second language. So I think now more than ever, our ability to stay focused is a competitive advantage. It really is. And I think for language learners, when they have to balance or juggle work, study, daily stress, family, mindfulness helps train that focus muscle. So it builds something called cognitive control, the ability to stay mentally on task?
Yeah, it's an epidemic. And I feel it certainly that these devices that we have allowed into our lives that make our lives better and richer in so many ways also are behavior modification machines. That's how they are funded. That's why almost everything on my phone is free. Paid for the phone, but I pay for maybe a fifth of the apps on my phone. Most of them are free because they are trying to change me. They are trying to basically make me more agitated, more impulsive, more worried, because when I am feeling like I'm in more scarcity, because when I am in those things, I'm a better consumer. So I think it is possible to get the benefits without the worst of the downsides, but we have to be very mindful, very intentional, because those devices trigger the same cascade of anticipatory pleasure chemicals as sugar, drugs, alcohol, pornography, whatever your addiction of choice is. So in order to get anything done, I find that I have to train my mind, because I'm living in a world that is a mismatch. My mind was was evolved to be around 120 people in a small village on the edge of the savannah. It didn't evolve to read. It certainly didn't evolve to be on a Zoom call. It didn't evolve to take in terabytes of data every day. So mindfulness is kind of a cognitive reset. It's almost like brushing your teeth. If you just ate this food and you didn't brush your teeth, it would fall out. And if you don't perform mental hygiene, you know, you can lose focus and we can lose touch with who we are and with what we care about.
Yeah, well, that was great what you said earlier about all of these devices being behavioral modification machines.
I was watching a Mexican movie on Netflix about a couple of scientists from the 1960s. Early 1960s, who created a time machine, accidentally travel to 2025. It was hilarious to see them looking. Everyone, of course, we're used to it now. Everyone's walking like this. They go into a convenience store. And the clerk is doing this and kind of little weird things in her ear. And they assume she's disabled because she's not hearing them or not responding to them. And when you just walk down the street and you see everybody on their phones, looking down, not paying attention to their surroundings. Like, this is a huge shift in human consciousness in a very short time.
It really is. I mean, I remember when people would buy TV dinners. So people would actually sit around the TV because it was still a novelty item. But we have observed many families who have changed that behavior in the same way that smoking has become antisocial. So I think there is hope. I think we might reach a critical point where we just realize we've got to be more proactive. We have to make sure that we're hanging on to our own humanity, our own cognition, our own downtime.
And again, it all starts with awareness, which is another word for mindfulness, to pay attention.
In another study I wanted to mention of Chinese university students, those with higher levels of mindfulness or mindfulness training reported better English proficiency, probably because they felt less anxious and burned out, and they were able to let go of tension and ride the wave of nerves. There's an expression for you, to ride the wave of nerves instead of getting stuck in fear or perfectionism. Fluency really depends on relaxed automatic recall, which is nearly impossible when your brain is, as you said earlier, Howie, when it's kind of in survival mode, when it's fight or flight. So the technique that I've used, and you're probably aware of it, is 4-7-8 breathing. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
That basically means to take in a breath for 4 beats and hold it for 7 beats. And then out for 8. And really push it out. I didn't take enough of a breath there. But I found that even doing that 2 or 3 times really does reset you. And I often do that before I have to speak in front of people, or sometimes even before a coaching call, I might even do that.
Well, that's it for part 1 of this episode, but there's more. In part 2, we'll dig deeper into practical techniques you can use immediately to calm your mind, improve your breathing, and speak English with even more clarity and confidence. If you found this helpful, remember to give this video a quick like and subscribe to our channel so you won't miss part 2 and future Fluent Edge episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in part 2.